So hello, and you're all very welcome. I sprang my mental health podcast, episode 9. Momentum continues to build. A personal declamation of the haps and mishaps in my life. Once a week, every week, for better or for worse. So thank you again for joining us, if you're on your way back. And if it's your first time, you're very welcome. So I record this podcast through the Anchor app on my held-together three-year-old smartphone, which seriously needs upgrading. But the app itself, it's distributed to Spotify and iTunes and various mediums. So whichever platform your ears are currently being singed on, please subscribe, please leave some feedback, and please share it with your mates, those you care about. Enlighten them with some wisdom. And that would be finely appreciated. Thank you very much. So I've had a bit of a peculiar week. The type of week that could break the average man. So the car broke down twice. Not once, but twice in the space of a couple of days. And I had to get the AA out twice. And this is one of those situations where I feel so far removed from being a pronounced, impressive, in-controlled alpha male. I mean, I'm there waiting in a Tesco car park with the bonnet up, and Mr. Mechanic arrives, and there he is, sleeves rolled up in his overalls, covered in oil. Like, clearly a real man doing a real day's work. And I'm standing there with a folder and a fucking fountain pen in one hand. How are you doing, pal? And he's giving me this detail on the anatomy of a car as I stare into this fucking mechanical labyrinth, nodding my head as if I know exactly what's happening. So applicators, transitions, accelerations, and haven't a clue. But I played it cool. And he got it fixed, told me to look out for a couple of things. I gave him the thumbs up. And I says, right, I am probably most likely going to have to look up what on earth he's actually talking about. So that was that. And then 3 days later, boom, again, exact same, car gone, bollocksed. It's the same process, call it in, wait for the AA. And then the same bloke arrives. I was like, oh, feck, anyway. So I felt like it was like a schoolboy who hadn't done his homework rocking in a Monday morning. He was like the school teacher wagging his finger at me. Do you not remember what I told you? Do you not remember all that detail about the transmission stationary supply diesel extractor? Smile and wave, lads. Smile and wave. So I don't know cars. But what I do know is coffee. And do you know when they say too much of something is bad for you? Whoever they are. Well, my voice, my daily pleasure in coffee. Yeah, too much of it, I suppose, in an indirect way has proved my undoing. And on the same day that the car broke down the first time, I got locked in the fucking toilet in my local Costa. The ignominy of it all. And I actually thought my reaction would be a bit more harsh towards myself. It was the perfect opportunity to drown in some self-pity and question the world and why I always find myself in these situations. But just when it happened, I actually just kind of found myself laughing. Maybe I'm being less harsh on myself and as I grow a little bit older. But yeah, it was a weird one. I didn't really know what to do. It was kind of like, I can't really boot the feckin' door down. Probably won't help the situation and may end up getting me in more trouble. And what I gathered from it was the little hook had just come loose on one side, and I figured, I said, this looks like it could probably be open from the other side. So I sat in the toilet for a few minutes to consider my thoughts and consider my options, and the greatest idea, the best idea, best option I came up with was ringing the store and informing them of my plight. But I maximised the situation. I turned it into my favour. And whilst on the phone, I ordered my flat white to be ready for collection from when I got out. So that gave them a good laugh. So yeah, an eventful couple of days. So the final contributor to an eventful week was, as some of you may know, I work professionally as a football coach, as a fitness coach, and with Shells. And last week the club decided not to renew the manager on here, his contract. He's held the position for 2 years, and such is the nature of this sport in its current form that, I don't know, it probably wasn't that surprising to a lot of people. It's an example of the ruthlessness and just the level of expectation and the lack of comfort for any manager at the highest level. And I mean, for me, obviously being involved, being subjective about it, I was very disappointed. I was very annoyed, and I just felt that, and I spoke about this before on the podcast, that the dynamic within this particular group that had been put together was extremely positive, and the process had led to progression over the last couple of months. We didn't quite get out of this season what we wanted, but it wasn't a waste of time, and there was still progress. And there was just that feeling, even after that bittersweet defeat in that final day in the playoff match, you just kind of felt, Jesus, I think we're onto something. We can build on this, but no, it's unforgiving, and that's that. And with it, most likely brings an end to what has been an incredible chapter in my own life. I looked at it last week. I've coached for 14 years straight. I started coaching when I was 21, to sort of as a substitute for playing, really, because I never really enjoyed playing football. But football as a player, for me, it brought out the worst in me. It brought out the worst in my personality. I was quite nasty. I was quite harsh on myself and harsh on others. And it just wasn't good for me. So in taking up a role of responsibility such as coaching, it put me in a situation where I had to be a little bit more considerate, a little bit more assertive, and a little bit more encouraging and directive, particularly in dealing with other people, whether it's working with another manager or obviously coaching players or otherwise. So the culmination of a lot of hard work, and make no mistake, it was a lot of hard work. It's a lot of time, it's a big commitment, regardless of what level you coach at, whether it's schoolboy right up to the highest level. You got to give up a lot of time, you got to have a lot of patience, because you're not just coaching football, you're dealing with a lot of personalities. You're most likely dealing with a lot of parents and guardians, particularly at schoolboy level. You could be dealing with big personalities as you move up the ages. It's demanding. It certainly is demanding, both physically and demanding. But look, the goal for me, because I fell down as a player and my attitude and mindset as a player was very poor and just engrossed with a really closed mindset, it was always my ambition to make up for that as a coach. And the aim for me was to get back to the highest level as a coach and try and make a difference at that level, because I wasn't able to do it as a player. So So 14 years, four of those, the last 4 years, I've been fortunate enough to work at the highest level. And the lessons, the insight, like the personal growth I've experienced as a result of that, is leaving me in better stead, not just as a fitness professional or a soccer coach, but as a man, as a person. And that growth and some of those lessons, they've been hard. And it's that acerbity in managing the vulnerability and the hesitancy in my own self-worth, in holding a role of responsibility, as I said, such as that of a professional football coach, is exactly what I want to talk about on this week's podcast. So before I move on to explain about just the difficulties in terms of vulnerability and working in professional sports, just to recap on last week's episode, I don't know what the fuck happened, but Jesus, I got some serious feedback. If you missed it, I spoke about just the challenges that I faced as a father. My son was 2 years old last week. It was his birthday. We had a wonderful weekend. But I just gave some examples of just the challenges that I faced kind of mentally since his birth, and just how it's lined up against my own issues in terms of self-belief and confidence. And it was one of those, I recorded it, I sent it out, I hit the button, and straight away I was like, oh, bollocks, this could go one way or the other. But what came back, it was beautiful. A lot of lads got in touch, kind of thanking me for being so honest and being so open about it, because it was something that they could certainly relate to. But as men, as fathers, we maybe sometimes feel a little bit held back in maybe showing that sensitive side, when you take into account that the strain a mother must go through. You've obviously a 9-month process pregnancy, you've a horrible experience of giving birth, as beautiful and natural as it is, it's extremely difficult, not very pleasant. And then obviously if the male, which is most cases, out working a week after the feckin' child is born, mother's left at home looking after the child, and that's a big ask. So I think as men we appreciate that. I don't think anybody would ever challenge in any way the royal contribution that a mother makes. But the reality is that obviously as men, we can have our struggles too. And that's why I felt it was important to put the message out there that as a dad to a 2-year-old child, I've had a lot of difficulty in handling the situation. But I'm doing my best to deal with it. But it reached a serious amount of people. I don't know who. I've been asking people to sort of share, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, or whatever you listen on. But somebody must have got a hold of this and told a rake load of people. So thanks. Fucking amazing. And if that's the impact that this podcast can have, fucking wonderful. Fucking wonderful. It's an art form. It's an expression of my creativity and what I love and what I enjoy doing. But if it has a deeper level in, you know, inspiring people and comforting people, such as the couple of dads who got in touch with me last week, and job done. That's magnificent. So just to bring that back about what was said up there in the previous segment, I want to talk about my involvement in football, which has been, it's been lifelong. It's funny, actually. It's one of those things that people will often, I can be this symbol of football, and Davey's mad into his football, this, that, and the other. And the funny thing is, I'm actually not. I can be very removed from it. I like to describe it. I said I'm so involved in it at a practical level that I don't go home. I don't watch a lot of football. I don't read about it a lot. I don't really write about it a lot either. And in fact, I don't really enjoy talking about it, because it can be a very generic conversation that is often influenced by the media, often influenced by just trends that are going on. And I think a lot of people can have a kind of a biased judgment on certain things. So I don't really enjoy talking about it, unless it's from a sort of performance perspective, from a coaching perspective. Then I do enjoy detailed chats with certain people who I trust and trust their knowledge on the game. But otherwise, it can be as fucking dull as talking about the weather for me. And that's just being honest. As a professional, as somebody who's involved, it's just not a topic of conversation on an everyday level that excites me. Football doesn't define me, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. But look, it's been a big part of my life. The club Shell's been a massive part of my life. Most of my friends I know through the club that I met at a very young age. I've experienced so much. I've travelled to so many places. It's been a network for me. And it always will be. I look forward to the day when I introduce Jace to the club, to the game, and hopefully he can experience the great success and the disappointments that come with it at the level that I've experienced it as well. But from a professional perspective, we worked as a coach. Listen, there will be zero crack in taking you through a chronological recap of 14 years of fucking cones and whistles.
So, to provide some context, I'll begin with, I suppose, what is consistent and proper to the lines that are linked to my issues with sustaining positive mental health and my involvement in sport. So, in growing up, the reasons I loved the ideal and the practice of coaching was just my curiosity to potential and to success, not just collectively as a celebration of a team or a unit, but just through individual betterment as well. And in growing up playing football, from a young age right up, like I never really had a strong role model as a coach or as a manager. I've seen a lot of mistakes. I've seen a lot of people treated badly. I was treated badly myself by coaches. But I believed, as I studied it more and learned more from my dad's a very principled and honest guy. He was a really good player. Just never really put up with any nonsense as a player. And just as a person. And I learned a lot from him, just in terms of principles of hard work and work ethic that I certainly carried into my training. When I began to take it seriously when I was about 15, 16. But I believe that when I eventually went in to take up a role of coaching, and I had hoped a role of management, probably at a later stage than even now, I didn't think I'd take it up so young, but I believed I had the personality and the enthusiasm and appreciation for the sport to be somebody who could mentor and to inspire not just a player on the pitch, but the person behind the player. And that's why I was always curious about it. So having worked, operated partly as sort of a coach and a fitness coach at some degree for quite some time over the years, I took up my first management role with our under-18s in 2012. Now this was very much close to the bone. It was weeks after what I call my lowest ebb, and I had been advised by someone very close to me not to take it, and with good reason. There was a feeling that, look, if this didn't work out, if I got in with a bad group of players, it could set me back, way further back mentally, as I began this program to kind of better myself. But like the sense of loss and the lack of identity I had been feeling, both leading up to my planned suicide and in its aftermath, kind of led me to believe that a need for purpose and a focus was there for me, and I could take that up. Because in terms of a regeneration of a professional career and a focus in that regard, that was so far removed from me. I wasn't ready for that at all. But there was an urge and there was an indication and a whim of excitement and energy inside me, within my tangled mind, that this was going to be enough to allow me accept that it could be a positive that could help move me on. And that's why I decided to take it up. In the everyday life, in the everyday scheme of things, you know, whether you take that role, it's not that big of a deal, but for that period, that time in my life, it was a fucking big deal. It was a serious big deal and a big decision for me to make. In management and coaching, look, my philosophy was simple. Sacrifice yourself for the team and you'll achieve. Sacrifice the team for yourself and you won't. And I just bred that into these guys. They're a really special group. Technically they were good. Probably not good enough to make it at the really, really highest level. And at the time, this is when Barcelona, total football, tiki-taka, small passes, it was all in vogue. And I learned after one game that these boys were not going to be able to do that. They weren't that technically good. And I'm not criticising here, it's just fact. I'm just saying they didn't have that ability. But what I knew, what they certainly had and showed it very early, was this sort of, this rancour, this spirit and this never give up attitude. And I knew we could tap into that. And from very early, I mean, look, the message was clear. Let's win this league. Let's challenge and try and win a league here. And most of them had never won anything before. They'd never been involved at that end of performance, that end of the scale of pushing to win something. And look, at that level, it's not everything. The lessons you learn along the way are equally as important. But to give them a target at a time where most of them were undertaking their leaving cert, it was a beautiful target to have, away from the intensity of school and the demands that were placing them there. It was like, look, this is your switch off. Let's go win a trophy. If you have an opportunity to come up here on a Tuesday and a Thursday, play our match on Sunday, and at the end goal, you'll be handed a medal. It's not a bad way to switch off and forget about exams. But, Jesus, they took everything in. They just absorbed everything. I couldn't have wished for a better tool, of a better process to help rebuild my life. And these guys were just a pleasure to deal with. Remarkable individuals with great ambition in themselves as well. We'd guys who were looking for serious points in their leaving certs. We had one guy who wanted to be an accountant. We had a guy who was an artist. He actually had a display on the gallery in Temple Bar, which I thought for a 17-year-old was incredible. And again, it just showed that the talent and the ability that these guys had went so much more deeper than just knocking a ball around on a pitch or being technically gifted with a football. And you'd other guys who their talents, their abilities were solely focused on football and sport. And you had a lot of guys looking to push to take scholarship on in the States, or to push on in areas of sport science, or coaching themselves, and they really put themselves to it. And the blends, the coming together of all of that, the culmination of all of that was just a group that just wanted to achieve. And like, look, they had that giddiness, they had that, you know, that level of immaturity and excitedness that you would expect from a group of teenage lads that you'd put together. But it was remarkable. It really was. It was remarkable. And they won the league. What can I say? They won it. And I think what it gave them was, it gave them memory for a start. I think in 20 years' time when they bump into each other, they'll remember it. They'll talk about it because it was so close. It was so perfect. It was a first for a lot of them. And it's a memory that I don't think they'll ever forget. It was a reference point for success that, whilst in sport, is something that I think they can take into other areas of their lives that I've said already, of talking about the career choice, what they wanted to do in college. I'm sure at this stage, actually 6 years on, they're probably all finished. But it was certainly a reference point to success. And I think what it provided as well, on a bigger scale, on a deeper scale, it provided a backbone to the conceivable function of a collective principle, which, although being outlaid in a sporting environment, was very much something that could be relatable in any aspect of your life. What you put into it is what you get out of it. It's that simple. I hate that saying, it's not rocket science. Of course, it's not fucking rocket science. But it's a really simple angle to look at. And what it gave me self-worth. It gave me an expression of the possibility of what I could do when I endorse myself and my abilities. And in this instance, my ability as a leader, as a mentor, as a teacher. And it gave me hope that there was autonomy, that there was complexity, and ultimately there was reward to be found in different aspects of my own life that I had somewhat chosen to ignore and neglect previously. And as I moved away from the darkest days of my life, there's beauty in this. I found solace through the ambition and excitement of youth, something that I had myself 10, 12 years ago, that got buried beneath the fears I had and the misguided desire to fucking destroy myself mentally. 2012, shells under 18s. They gave me fucking hope in my life, and it was unbelievable. So to move on a couple of years, I earned a promotion as such to the first team, so be working, I say professional. I've addressed this several times in the podcast. It's semi-professional, but in my eyes it's professional. So I'd be working professionally with Shells, and this was my ambition. This is what I had gunned for. And my opportunity had come around, thanks to Kevin Doherty, who I had known a long time, had worked very closely with when I was the manager of the 18s and he was the 19s manager. He'd gotten a promotion himself, and he had asked me to come up and join him as one of his coaches, and I was very grateful of the opportunity. And despite having moved on from the depths of my impending suicide and everything that was so dark and fucking miserable, I was, and look, I still very much am, a work in progress. But at that particular time, I was cocooned with insecurity. And I was only really learning and figuring out more about my vulnerability. And what I was learning intimidated me. I was frightened by the scale of my vulnerability, which, on a positive note in regard to my progress, I was working on turning around as a scale of opportunities to grow and to develop. But what I was discovering about myself just really did scare me, and it set me back slightly. But I remember at the time just speaking with counsellors, and that is that in some ways it gets worse before it gets better. You've got to explore, you've got to go deep, you've got to ask questions you've never asked yourself before in order to get answers you maybe haven't come across before either. And that's very general, I understand that. I don't want to get too heavy into that end of it, but this is just a sort of an overview of what state of mind I was in at this particular time. So in stepping up, it's important to remember that it doesn't make a fucking difference what you have done as a youth coach or as a player or otherwise, or what you do in the real world. This was the big time. This was high end. This was a results business. And there was a tension, a demand, and a ruthlessness about this environment. And from the off, I fucking struggled. I wasn't ready for it. And I don't want to be one of those people that will shield that and just make it look as if everything was fucking fine, everything was rosy, I was where I should have been, I knew everything, I was parting my knowledge onto a group of people who were operating on the same level as I was, and everything was great. It wasn't the case. I was completely and utterly out of my depth. And small things, like I remember speaking up, trying to conduct a drill or a warm-up, and I'm looking around, everyone's talking, nobody's listening to me. And under normal circumstances, I'd address that and you'd reel people back in. But immediately I began to doubt my own principles that I worked so hard on in a football context. And I started asking myself, well, maybe I just don't get the culture. Maybe this is the way it is. Maybe I'm an idiot. And I was afraid. I didn't know how to carry myself, to depict myself as stern but respectable. And slowly just that doubt began to creep in. And I just found my confidence sapped from the experience. I slowly began to dread the responsibility that was placed upon me. And I couldn't speak. I stuttered. I fucking stutter in this podcast, but that's different. It's just because I get excited and I get really immersed in my thoughts. But different kind of stutter. I literally opened my mouth and nothing would come out. And it was just all fear. I was worried. I found myself worrying what people thought of me. I found myself paranoid that people were looking at me, thinking outright that this guy's a fucking idiot, he shouldn't be here. Maybe they were, I don't know. As a group, the majority of them are fine, wonderful group. Again, a lot of young players on an individual level, very respectful, and interesting guys to talk to. But just collectively, I just couldn't handle it. As I said, there was a tension about us that I really struggled with. And it was just that dread of responsibility, and I was so disappointed in myself. I felt like a fucking loser. I felt useless. Just due to the intensity of the demands, and I just fell back on the notion that, like, the manager who I knew so well was dealing with bigger issues, with bigger pressure and bigger problems than my inability to fucking handle myself as a professional. And on that note, I said nothing. I tried to hide it as much as I could and make it look as if I was comfortable. I didn't feel respected, but look, let's be precise about this and not beat around the bush. This was the fucking high end. Like, this was not a kick around in the park. This is what I had aimed for all my life, but very quickly I was lost in the severity of its appeal. And whilst I hoped, and my intentions with it was, this would help me grow, I unfortunately found myself sort of recoiling and going back in the opposite direction. It made me shrink. I allowed it to make me shrink. And our first game, it was a pre-season friendly in Sligo, and I'd made arrangements to undertake an assessment for one of the coaching qualifications that are required. But the only date available was a date in Galway, and I wanted to get this done before the actual season started. So I decided I'd hit two birds with one stone. We had the friendly in Sligo on a Saturday, assessment in Galway on a Sunday. So that my plan as such was not to take the team coach, but to drive to the match in Sligo and then make an onward journey to Galway after the game, stay the night, do the assessment, drive home Sunday. And I had endured, leading up to that, I endured a really difficult week with regard to my progress. And when I say progress, I'm talking about my mental development from a point of zero, which was what I mentioned, my lowest ebb, May 2012, when I had made the decision to end my life. So when I talk about progress, that's what I mean. It's the line of progression from that point to making myself better mentally. But that week, I had just been hampered. And through numerous things, just through dealings and work, I started a new job. And on top of my spiralling confidence within the coaching capacity, I just kind of found everything seemed difficult again. Everything seemed overwhelming. And there was this, just a fucking tower of mental tyranny that threw me off the top head first. And the several, I hate conflict. I fucking hate it. I'm really terrible in conflicting situations. And that week there were conflicting situations and interactions that had bursted my resolve. And it, just from what I recall, there was no real right or wrong in any of those situations. But I just sort of found myself with a lack of cohesion in articulating a debate and an argument which involved me directly, and it led to a nuance of distrust towards myself and my capability to become mentally stronger. And this all came out in different ways, and in that particular week I experienced just an arduous series of breakdowns. I wasn't sleeping. I was up all night. I was crying. I was shaking. And mini, I don't want to say panic attacks. I've never really suffered panic attacks, but just really sort of minuscule mental breakdowns that had me very anxious. And consequently, that carried on from a Friday night into a Saturday morning. I hadn't slept. I was delayed. I arrived late to the team hotel for the meal on our way to Sligo. Naturally, it didn't go unnoticed, and it didn't go unpunished either, and rightfully so. The manager fucking nailed me on it. But I didn't feel it appropriate at the time, or I didn't have the confidence to even explain the reasoning behind my delay. So I kind of said nothing. I probably came up with some fucking shitty excuse. But that night, it was a difficult day that compounded a difficult week. And that night when I drove onwards from Sligo to Galway, it was snowing. It was mid-January, it began to snow. It was a strange experience, that drive. I was very distant. I think it's the N17 that I took into Galway, and the entire route is laden with white crosses right and left on the sideway of the road, in memory of those who lost their lives in road accidents. And such was my mindset I was just drained of belief, confidence, and foresight that, like, in the haze of this kind of white, snowy mid-January, I had split-second torments in my head that I just figured that I'd be better served and better remembered as just another fucking white cross on the side of the road. That's how fucking hard things can get sometimes. And it's really raw, really honest. I apologise if that's slightly frightening for people, but this is what I talk about when I talk about mental health awareness, about the experiences that people have. That's a fucking difficult experience that I had had in a difficult period of my life. And a difficult period of my life in this case was a week, which was compounded by a lot of things. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. So the fact that my schedule only really allows for this podcast to be recorded in a splintered fashion and most likely works in my favour in situations like this when I bring up these intellective storms that are from my past. And the more episodes that I do, I learn that while I've enhanced my focal courage within and become somewhat objective and removed and comfortable with stuff that has gone on in my past, to explore different experiences in such itemized detail, things that have happened, what I did, how I reacted, how I felt, all of that together combined with a thorough examination such as what I've just spoken about there for 20 odd minutes. It's kind of just showing me that there's still, you know, I can still raise barriers that knock back that emotional comfort, and there's still, you know, tiny elements of what went on that still affect me. So to get a break, it's been a day or two since I recorded that last segment, so I've had time to kind of compose myself because I was probably getting a little bit immersed in it emotionally. So I've a chance to kind of remove myself, settle, and kind of go again. And for you poor bastards, that's Jesus, you've just listened to a 30-minute spiel about what is essentially an explanation of my negligence as a coach. With zero fucking morale, zero moral, and zero fucking punchline. So sorry about that. But we'll get there, we'll get there. My inward scrutiny and my assessment of my self-inducing failure, it was no one's fault. I mean, like, the fucking manager, Kevin, he's an absolute gem. As was the assistant that worked at him, Johnny Martin, absolute gentleman, really shrewd operator. And the review from my standpoint now is that, like, I let them down. I was not capable of doing the job that I was given. I couldn't do it efficiently or professionally because of my mental health struggles. That's my fucking problem, which ultimately became somebody else's problem. And that's why I sort of state very regularly that if you are affected by something or struggle with something in terms of mental health or mental illness, you're not immune to pissing people off. And that can be difficult to deal with and accept sometimes. I mean, I was a waste of a fucking tracksuit. And what should have been met with, you know, with anticipation and excitement, it was too often met with despair as I fucking sat in my car before training, with me head in the steering wheel, just repeating in defeat, like, I can't do this. I can't fucking do this. How am I going to face this 90-minute training session without making a complete and utter tit of myself? And like, that was a chosen perception and a damaging attitude which gravely undone all the hard work that I had done previously to reach that point of promise and purpose in my life. Not just in football, but overall. And the overall work I had done just to improve my life. And I was allowing it to undo me once again. But I think the angle of prosperity came with just that decision to grow. It was a fuck that moment. Fuck this. let's grow, let's build again. And that's what it was. It was a fucking decision to rise above my own feebleness and not allow these alleged perceptions to ruin what I had worked so hard for. And I made peace with the personal conflict, or the person, not the personal conflict. The fuck am I trying to say? The personal concept of my own shortcomings. And I began to cradle the breaks that were available to me, and to trust my knowledge and trust that the manager held value in me and he trusted me, and to play to my strengths. It's something we kind of neglect. It's always about improving shit that you're bad at. Work on what you're fucking good at and play to your strengths. And that's what I did. That put me back in a position where I could help people with a practical approach that magnified what I was good at and what I was there to do. So I really clued into that, really honed into shit I was good at and comfortable at, and gained my confidence through that. So, I mean, look, football, it can be a selfish game. The bond amongst the squad, it can be powerful, no doubt. And I've experienced that. It can be really special. But ultimately, I mean, look, everybody wants what's best for themselves on an individual level. And if I wasn't performing to my potential, then 9 or 10 players weren't either. And we all have our targets, our standards, our illusions, and fucking disillusions of where we are and where we should be. And here's the deal. And I mean this in the nicest, most positive way possible. When it came to my position, when it came to what I had to do, nobody gave a fuck that Davey was struggling, that Davey was having a bad day or a bad week. And I mean that as a positive, because everybody is wrapped up in themselves and progressing for themselves at that level. People look out for themselves. They're wrapped up with what they are currently doing or have to do to make it better for themselves as a sportsman. And I say that kind of positively. Like, that's the fucking demand. That's what's placed upon players. That's the culture. It's fucking ruthless. Can't underestimate that at all. It is fucking ruthless. And I had to take that approach. Only I can look after fucking I in the greater play, in a demanding climate of fucking high-end sport. That's my safety fucking word this week. I always have a safety word. I think high level and high-end are my safety words this week. Just keep falling back in that. But that's pro sport. And only I had the capability to find a fucking sturdiness to my patience, to my tolerance, to my self-awareness, to the goings-on. And really simple, that, like, it is, it's just really simple not to take the misguided anger or the misguided opinion from players when they were maybe having a go at me or not listening or not paying attention or worried about something else, not to take any of that so fucking personally. Because it wouldn't matter if it was me or somebody else, they'd still be pissed off that they weren't in the team. Or still be pissed off that they can't trap the ball the way they're supposed to, or play it the way they're supposed to, or understand the tactical outline that's been placed upon them. So I learned that. I focused on that. Just to have a fucking sturdiness about myself. To be tough. To be respectful. But I couldn't respect other people if I couldn't respect myself. And that's how it started. That's how it changed. Sturdiness, just respect myself. Build on that. And my own took over. He took over from Kevin about 2 years ago. What transpired was there was a conversation with regards mental health that happened almost by accident. And I kind of spoke to him very openly. It didn't begin about me. It was just a sort of a general discussion. And it did lead to an opportunity for me to speak really openly about my past. And again, progressively, how I was working on myself to be a better man. But I was really keen to emphasise my truth that while it's difficult and damaging and always a work in progression, was not an excuse for me to be subpar in my performance as one of his coaches. And I believe that my honesty reflected favourably with acceptance and understanding, not just to the manager, but to the squad and to the greater circle of football in this country. When eventually I launched the Aware 10 and 10 campaign earlier this year. I was really keen to include the sporting public in that. I was not the sporting public, the sporting professionals within the campaign, just to highlight the demands that are placing them. And with that respect that I had garnished for myself, in removing myself from the fucking selfishness of my own vulnerability, it enabled me to fully observe the true measure of demand and the pressure that is placed on these players as they look to hone not just their sporting skills and ambitions, but their academic, their career, their relationship tidings as well. And it isn't easy. I've spoke about this before. I will do so again because it's something I believe in. It's something I believe that's important as well. So for me to announce to like that cauldron of masculinity that is a football team, that is the world of football, that I'd been suicidal, that I had been depressed, that I was struggling, and I still do what I have to do in taking small steps and promoting my own mental health. It scared me. It fucking terrified me because I wasn't really sure how it was going to go. But it was met with, again, with an acceptance and an understanding with both the men's and the women's leagues by players all around the country. And the reason is simple. The reason it was accepted with such love and openness, it's really simple. It's because mental health, emotional vitality, it is the most fucking important aspect of our society today. And the viewpoint of sports people exemplifies that. Without a doubt, it really does. It shows that. And it was a pocket of that demographic, predominantly young people coming through different disciplines, as I said, with sport, with college, with work, with relationships, boyfriends, girlfriends, with family. I believe they stood for different pillars in society today that represent this very fact that my mental health is number one fucking priority in this country. And that's why things need to continue to grow and develop in terms of professional assistance and help and understanding and awareness, all those things. And fucking hell, of course the players understood it. How the fuck couldn't they? And look, I suppose my honesty, my own growth, my own openness, it brought awareness to that demographic, to that particular group, sports people, that are too often regarded as bulletproof. And that awareness, and I hope that explanation at an individual level, that if they saw my story and maybe had a look at their own selves with a bit more self-awareness and positivity, that to me is a more important teaching and legacy than my ability or lack of ability to coach someone how to fucking pass a football. And if I'm to leave the world of football with that and that alone, 14 years of coaching was a fucking success. I don't think I can wrap that up in any other way. There you go. Fucking hell, 45 minutes. I really didn't think this conversation would take so long, but thanks so much for sticking with me. Look, I suppose it's important. It's important. It's an important part of my life. It was an important lesson for me. It's an important stage of growth in my own journey. And it taught me a lot about people. And thanks for sticking with us. I'm going to wrap it up now. 45 minutes. That's the aim every week, thereabouts. So thanks very much for listening. As always, if you have any feedback on any of this, please let me know. If it's inspiring, if it's interesting, if it's comforting, please let me know. If it's complete and utter garbage, equally, let me know. It's important. Spotify, iTunes, the Anchor app, please subscribe. Please leave feedback. There's my word of the week that I fuck up. Do it every week. Please leave feedback. It does help in terms of growing the podcast. And do share with your mates. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll check in with you next week. All the best.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.